Hey, do you like the Star Wars?
We sure do.
How do you like it when you don't like the Star Wars? And that's the real question here tonight.
Yeah, pretty heavy topic tonight.
As you may have guessed from the title, Force Fails. This literally is, to quote Yoda, "That is why you fail."
Oh, you stole it.
Ah-ha!
That was my line. I thought I'm gonna
You're
zing him
gonna
with this
sneak
one.
that one in, did I, Cole?
That's okay. That shows we're on the same wavelength.
That is so true. And that's important tonight because we are going to talk about, as you've guessed, because we do this show every couple of weeks and because, you've heard the sort of things that come off the top of our heads, we like the Star Wars. We love the Star Wars.
Definitely.
We live, eat, breathe, sleep on, and otherwise have a healthy relationship with Star Wars.
Case in point, I had used my Star Wars coffee mug this morning, and I'm wearing my Star Wars pajamas.
Well, there you go.
A little bit too much information, I guess.
I really want to know what you're wearing, but if you're wearing Star Wars, then it's okay by me. That is by no means a force fail. But there are times, when the most avid fans among us feel that twinge of disappointment, that sense of just being aghast, that wondering, was it the truckload of money that made you forget what Star Wars ought to be, George Lucas? This of course takes place before Disney took over.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
But
Yeah,
we're going to
and
talk
that's the
about the
thing. That's
things.
the thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you have a property like Star Wars and you get to a point where you start having, it becomes a success and you have more people chiming in and giving their 2 cents and they start expanding it into different fields. Of course, you're going to start running into areas where you think, like slam on the brakes on the land speeder because that's not where Star Wars should be going.
Full reverse, Chewie.
There you go. I remember one in particular, one force fail that came early on as a kid. Of course, as a kid, you're so accepting of a lot of things.
Oh, that is
But
so true.
I do remember distinctly watching Return of the Jedi and when Chewbacca and the Ewoks swung onto the ATST, the two-legged chicken walker, as he's
Indeed.
doing his Tarzan growl. I remember even as a kid thinking, Chewbacca doesn't know anything about Tarzan.
Yeah, that was really, I think, we complain a lot about, and we'll get to this a bit, about how, Easter egg heavy the episode one especially became. And we will definitely be getting into the Easter egg problem in a bit. But we forget sometimes that there was at least that one audio Easter egg. Is that even an audio Easter egg? Is that a thing? I guess it is.
Sure, sounds good to me.
Excellent. Well, we're going to go with it. We're going to own it. It's the audio Easter egg. You heard it here first. But yeah, that was this sort of ridiculous, Ron Ely as Chewbacca that had no place in the movie. And it was very cringeworthy. And to this day, and what's more bothersome is that it was repeated. It
What?
returned very subtly, but it was there in the, was it, I believe in episode three on Kashyyyk.
Really?
Yes, when the Wookiees swing in to hop
Oh,
aboard the droid.
that's right. Oh, that's right.
Oh,
Oh, wow.
which I guess was meant to set some sort of retro precedent or something.
That's right.
See, Chewie learned it from his parents, from Itchy.
Yeah,
Maybe
how are
that
we
was
not?
Itchy there swinging in back when he was younger.
And then another thing that they did in that respect was, of course, in A New Hope, you had the stormtrooper that bumps his helmet as the door is going up. And of course, that's a legitimate flub that I didn't see until years later, until it was pointed
Oh,
out to
yeah,
me.
until it was pointed out to me, and now I
Yeah.
can't help but see it.
Exactly. But then of course it's a natural flub. That's nice, whatever. It's in the film. is something to chuckle at. But then they go and they reference it in Attack of the Clones when Jango Fett bumps his helmet going up the ramp into the Slave One. And you're thinking, you know, as it's supposed to be a little nod to that moment. And I'm thinking, but that doesn't work. You're purposely doing that.
And I think it's also, it really smacks of, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Okay.
Where you try to crowbar every single iconic Indiana Jones thing into one instance in his childhood.
Uh-huh.
Harrison Ford's chin scar, the hat, the it belongs in a museum, I mean, literally everything.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of those things that just bothers me to no end.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to put in every little bit of iconography.
I never really thought of that way. You're right. And then later in the catacombs.
Going from snakes, from indifference to abject terror of snakes, when you fall into the inexplicable box o' snakes. I'm sure there are herpetists everywhere who cringed at that. Like, that's a good way to transport your snakes for your circus snakes?
Exactly. That's a good point.
So, and then in a way, that sort of bumping of the helmet is both a nod to an accidental little bit of Star Wars mythos,
mm-hmm.
while also I think it was a deliberate attempt to explain the so-called dented helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Because once young Boba gets Dad's helmet, which, you know, Dad had the good sense to fall out of it, or his head did anyway.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, if you haven't noticed that, you actually can see the shadow of Jango's head popping out of there like a cork. You know, you have to imagine that young Boba took that home, hosed it out. Little Febreze. Little Brillo pad. Took it down to the hot rod shop, had it repainted. And like, you know, we could get this dent. No, leave the dent.
Yeah.
My but dad got that bumping his head.
But that dent's not there in Attack of the Clones later on.
Oh, you're right.
And I'd rather think that dent came from some drag-out brawl.
Of course, maybe while he was on Geonosis, not being trusted because he's a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
According to Dooku. Piece that one together, kids. Maybe he had it fixed, and then Boba gets the helmet. What does he do? He goes off and bumps the same spot. And at that point, you just, it's like a hole in your wall. You just put a picture over it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's too late. It's just going to happen again.
Yeah.
Or maybe he bumped his head in the same spot.
I like to think he got it in an all-out brawl with somebody who was near his equal, and so he kept it as a reminder of that time that he almost got bested by somebody.
Also, when he got that big a dent in that thick a helmet, it also put a dent in his skull, so it actually holds the helmet on better. It's like a Lego.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a new one. That is definitely... your brain, what the heck?
How many years have you been listening to?
Are you sure you haven't dented your head from time to time?
It happens alarmingly often.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, as you say, when you have something that's that successful, it can kind of go to your head, bumps notwithstanding. And certainly the key example of this, and as you say, we were more forgiving as children, was the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes.
And I would classify that as the most successful force fail. Because it's just as endearing as it is awful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like having a pet skunk. They're kind of cute and fun, but, you know, if you forgot to get it descented, it can be a lot of trouble.
It definitely is a stinker.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, it's funny going back and seeing it as an adult the first time. Because, you know, back when that aired, that was it. You got to watch it, and that was the end.
Mm-hmm.
You were never going to see it again.
Oh, yeah.
And it would be easily 15 years later before people started burning it to putting it on VHS cassettes or burning it onto DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to go back and relive that. And it's sort of like watching old TV shows or the made-for-TV movies that were just seemed so amazing back then, or that god-awful scary movie that wasn't scary at all.
Yeah.
Trilogy of Terror, which I've talked about, I think, on the USG.
Or Gargoyles.
Or Gargoyles, yes, indeed. Wow, Bernie Casey. But, you've got the Harvey Korman segments. Somehow I managed to shut all that out. I don't know how. I mean, I remember there being certain aspects, like the Julia Child bot. But I didn't remember the awful, malfunctioning robot instructor to tell you how to put your thing together. I definitely didn't remember the Wookiee porn.
No, I think we all blocked that one out.
I think so, and I
collective consciousness.
It's frightening. It's uncomfortable to watch now.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the scene is so ridiculously drawn out.
Yeah.
And it just feels terrible.
Yeah. That was just their way of wanting to give us more.
They had
the success of Star Wars, and they said, what can we quickly crank out and put out there? Oh, here, let's do this variety show type thing that vaguely has a connection to Star Wars.
Well, absolutely. And I think also what you had going on there was, at that point in history, everybody was trying to hitch their wagon to that star. And so in addition to having your holiday special going down, and I've written on this before and probably talked about it before, there was a Richard Pryor television special that did a sketch with the Cantina Creatures. There was Donnie and Marie did a whole set
piece. That's right.
Piece
Donnie and Marie, the Muppets.
With dancing stormtroopers and Paul Lind in an Imperial officer's garb.
Uh-huh.
Talk about awkward. And the Muppets, by Empire had a very bizarre looking look. So, these are sort of the things where it was sort of a success and a failure simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you get into the real fails? There were certainly many. The Han Solo books I've talked about before. I remember seeing a comic strip or comic book adaptation of the Han Solo at Star's End. I remember people reading that and saying, oh, this is amazing. And I thought, okay, the whole Blue Max droid just was so non-Star Wars. You could have plugged that whole story into anything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the chief offender in the literature department will for me always be the Lando Calrissian.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not even going to go back into the whole silly rabbit thing. But
yeah, I think that's been referenced.
I've talked about that often. But it's a good example of, before the reins really started getting pulled in on things.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, I'll probably piss a lot of people off here going back to the holiday special. Getting Nirvana Studios to do the animated segment for the special.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the worst animation in the history of the world.
It really is, but that being said, as a kid, that was the coolest part of that whole thing. That's the only thing that stuck in my memory all those years later until I saw it finally on a bootleg.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The two coolest things were that, and of course where you got Boba Fett, but that's hardly a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And Lumpy having a stuffed bantha.
Yeah.
I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Well, what other forced fails?
Should we get into... What was that?
What are some other areas where the Force failed you?
Well, I want to touch on a few from before we get into too many things. Possibly touching on some of the ones from the movies. And I know we referenced the Tarzan thing. And quite honestly, most thinking about it, this shouldn't be a surprise. Most of my things that I have a problem with come from the prequels, which can be a whole mini series of podcasts in itself. But I thought, I would like to cover a few of them, but I would like to cover some from the original trilogy. There's very few things, very, very few things
that
I have.
It is hard to find.
It really is, and that speaks to the strength of what went into the originals as opposed to the prequels. But one thing I thought – well, there's an obvious one. Let's just get the obvious one out.
Absolutely.
Leia's accent. Why? Why is she British at the beginning and then loses her accent as the movie progresses?
I think I'm going to justify that right here on the spot. I'm going to do a stunt Jedi justification. This doesn't forgive the failure, but I'll give you a stunt justification right here on the spot. The reason is, once she saw her homeworld destroyed, just completely disintegrated, reduced to its constituent atoms, she dropped the whole hoity-toity accent.
So you think she was faking it?
Oh, yeah. Well, she was just being, you know, all haughty. Oh, I'm in the royal family. Oh, look at me. I'm Princess Leia. And then, you know, once she had to be just a common rebel, albeit, you know, in command.
It's like, when she was reduced to ruler of space debris.
Yeah. you know, and enough people were like, so you're princess, you're heir to the throne of what? I'm sorry, isn't that throne now like, you know, isn't it particulate matter now? Along with the palace, the grounds, the entire countryside. Oh, the whole planet. Yeah, so I think it was, you know, really her camping up the whole royal family thing.
Yeah,
when it
served
her, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay, do you think it was deliberate that they did the exact same thing with Amidala in episode 1?
Maybe it's a space princess. Space princess.
Wow. Space princess.
Did I say space princess on this show? Maybe it is a, you know, royalty type of thing. When you sit the throne, you get all Joffrey on everybody. And then behind the scenes, you're a complete hick.
Apologies to all the hicks out
there. That's right.
Yeah.
Especially the hicks who aren't royalty.
Yeah. Well, I was really trying to rack my brain about things about the original trilogy. And
okay,
one thing that I thought of... I'm sorry?
Blue elephants.
One thing that came to mind actually just today, and it's not so much a fail, but it's probably something looking back all these years later, I wish they would have thought of. I think the only thing that the original trilogy is missing was that they only have one actual main female character.
That's what we call the olive oil syndrome, Eddie.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, don't get me wrong.
It's a fine tradition that carried straight through to the Smurfs.
But don't get me wrong. Leia is an impressively strong character. I mean, she faces these near impossible challenges with the death of her people and culture, the constantly having to make the right command choices during times of war, learning
having
that
to maintain that accent when it served her.
Yeah. Learning that Vader was her father. I mean, she overcame all these and grew as a character. As each chapter of the story progressed, she just became a stronger, more capable character.
I agree.
But
yeah, Star Wars is just a sausage fest.
Yeah. Saber fest. Let's keep it clean.
Oh, saber fest, yes.
A little cleaner than that. We'll go the Spaceballs route.
That's right.
Your Schwartz is bigger than mine.
It was a Schwartz fest.
Yeah, Schwartz fest. But, you know, just thinking back, you know, how awesome would it have been if we would have gotten another strong female character somewhere in there? You know, maybe one that wasn't from a privileged background, or a character who had more of an inner struggle.
I have to agree, but you also have to look at the time period where this was made.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, you know, to have a character that was that strong right out of the gate,
yeah,
was pretty impressive. But for the most part, action movie meant guy or guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to get away with a couple of comical droids and in the mix, plus a strong female lead.
Yeah.
Who, literally, she was the damsel in distress, but she really wasn't all that distressed.
Oh, definitely not.
And that's, you know, but again, we're starting to border on things that went right, and this is all about things that went wrong, damn it.
Okay, we'll reel it in and get back.
Yeah, it's hard to do, though, because you can't talk about the bad without finding yourself sort of steering into the good, because the bad currents aren't, especially in the original trilogy, aren't that many.
Okay, then let's do this. Special edition, go.
Now you can steer into the mire.
Yeah.
And that is, the special editions is a fine example of a tinkerer who just keeps adding and adding and adding. And the next thing you know, you get those German clocks that are like, you know, a miniature version of It's a Small World at Disneyland.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, enough, you know? I just want just trying to see if it's lunchtime. I don't need a song and dance.
Mm-hmm.
And there were things that I will concede needed fixing.
Yeah.
The see-through canopy on the snowspeeder that you didn't notice until somebody said, hey, look, see-through canopy on the snowspeeder.
Uh-huh.
So it was a good idea to go in and clean up some of the technical problems.
Sure.
It was a good idea to, you know, perhaps I'll give you that maybe the big foam rubber dewback on the hill was not
exactly
exciting.
Yeah.
But when you trade not exciting foam rubber dewback on the hill that just is a essentially flavor, what that did was flavor the scene. Probably cost hundreds of dollars to build the damn thing.
Uh-huh.
And then you had to hire somebody to, drag the damn thing up the hill and shove it on. And you had to get a guy on a ladder and get the stormtrooper up into the saddle.
Uh-huh.
Then everybody had to clear the desert so they could shoot a five-second scene. But the thing is, it added this wonderful element for its day. I'm drifting back into the good again. So I'm afraid what happened was when you try to replace that with something more dynamic, then what happens is you start to overdo it.
Yes.
You know, the stationary dewback wasn't enough, but what you got in its place was too much. And that was the biggest problem, I think, with the special editions, is this lack of an ability to find a happy medium.
That's right.
It's like, overdo it or nothing. And, you know, I would have rather seen that money go into disappearing the ears on the tops of the heads of every single Ewok. Because to me, if they didn't have teddy bear ears sticking out of their hoods, I would have bought into them wholeheartedly.
Maybe some bloody fangs in their mouths.
Not even that. I mean, I can let Lucas tell his designers dare to be cute. But the fact that they took the teddy bear-esque thing and just took it to full teddy bear.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they were missing was a stife button. Or Roosevelt glasses. You take your pick.
Yeah.
But, I mean, good night. I just, any minute now, I was expecting Christopher Robin to come in and pull one of them out of a beehive.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The Ewoks, I think, were probably the biggest original trilogy fail. Because there are ways they could have achieved that in a more understated way.
That's right.
And literally, the lack of the top of the head ears would have done wonders. If they looked little teddy bear-esque and they just had big-ass hoods and junk on their heads, but you didn't have little teddy bear ears sticking out the top like a teddy bear.
You know, that's crazy that I've never thought of that one little change to the difference, but now that you mention it, you know, would make them...
This is my challenge to everyone listening. When you watch Return of the Jedi next, try to allow yourself to disappear those ears, and you'll see a much better creature come out of it. And I think some of the early sketches may not have had the ears sticking out the top. I'm not certain, but if you just, you know, if you imagine away those ears, you get a much better workable Star Wars creature.
Yeah, it's true.
And of course, you know, let's get into the serious fails. Chief offender for
the Bantha in the room.
Exactly. What is your chief offender for the special edition?
I think my chief offender and probably everybody else's, Greedo, Han.
Oh, the Han shot.
Greedo
shoots first.
Yeah.
Which is not only unnecessary, but incredibly awkward.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a trio of offenders, and it's hard to classify which one is public enemy number one.
That one is public enemy number one in my book.
That's a very good point there, because I was actually, there's one that edges in slightly.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
That is one of the worst, and the god-awful Jabba tail walking.
Yes, especially in the very first close pass, second.
Uh-huh, with that Jabba that looked nothing like Jabba.
He looked like one of those little squeeze toys that when you squeeze it, the eyes bulge out.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it looked like to me.
It was stress Jabba.
Yeah.
Han was a little stressed, so he stepped on the tail.
We should market that. Yeah. Make it a Rancor, a JCU. Yeah, got, the Rancor exclusive
stress Jabba. Maybe we could get like that Jabba glob that Hasbro had.
Uh-huh.
And so when you squeeze it, it also coughs up green slime.
But, you know, the thing with Greedo shooting first, you know, for years we had established in our minds what a rogue Han Solo was.
Yeah.
What a scoundrel, and what he will do to stay alive no matter what. There was nothing wrong with him shooting. His life was threatened.
Well,
he was sitting there with a gun pointed at him. He's already being threatened. What more do we want?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like every 16th episode of, or you know, every 12th or 16th episode of Walking Dead. They drew on us! But the thing about that is that, apart from just looking ridiculously awkward, the only thing that could have made it worse, because this is in the same category, this is the same family, is if Han and Greedo both drew walkie-talkies.
Oh my gosh!
Because that's what that was. That was E.T. walkie-talkies. That was Lucas channeling Spielberg, channeling stupid.
Yeah.
And at least Spielberg had the good sense to later admit, I was channeling stupid.
It's such a stupid scene. It's such a stupid idea from the get-go. But to make it worse, Han does that such an awkward little jolt to the right that looks so unnatural, so obvious it's fake. They do that. Well, you know, we wanted to make sure he was able to dodge Greedo's blast. Well, guess what? Where Greedo's blast hits in the wall, it's still pretty far away from where Han's head originated from.
Yeah, you're just waiting for like a JFK interlude there where they analyze the footage back and to the left.
The magic laser. The magic laser. That's right. That one's for you, Colleen, Miss JFK's conspiracy.
So. And also for Stewart. So, you know, yeah, that is really one of the chief offenders there, certainly, by great degree. But I have to say there's one that just edges it out. Because it's also a scene killer.
Okay.
It's another one that robs the scene of its original intent. And to me, it actually does an even worse justice, you know, injustice mm-hmm. to the spirit of the scene than Greedo shooting first. And that is Luke's whiny-ass bitch scream. Okay, let's go back to 1980.
Uh-huh.
And we're watching The Empire Strikes Back, and Darth Vader has just revealed to Luke Skywalker that he's his father, and he wants to turn Luke to the dark side. He wants to double-cross his boss and start a father and son business called the Galactic Empire .2. And he wants this to be worse than those cigarette commercials from those anti-smoking ads from the 70s, like father, like son. Think about it, won't you? And Luke's thinking about it.
Yeah.
And given the choice between being turned to the dark side, becoming a tool like his dad.
Yeah.
To be surrendering everything that is good about him. Giving up the hero's journey that he began on Tatooine when his aunt and uncle were toasted. Just to stay alive. And choosing to surrender his own life for the good of the universe. He lets go of the gantry and falls to his death, or so he assumes. He is prepared to sacrifice himself rather than become an agent of evil. When you make the decision that you're going to sacrifice your life in favor of fate worse than death, you don't then follow that with
mm-hmm. Yeah.
What that does is two things. It, number one, blocks out beautiful incidental music
mm-hmm.
that adds a layer to the unfortunate tragedy of Luke's presumed death before he apparently falls victim to one of the myriad vacuum holes that riddle the walls of that tube there mm-hmm. in the bizarre, inexplicable technologies of the Star Wars universe. And ultimately, is given a second chance at life. But it also makes Luke look like a complete pussy. It's like, oh, you know, I guess I shouldn't have let go after all. Hopefully I'll get sucked into a hole and the Falcon will save me.
You're right. It kills off all the heavy of the previous couple of minutes. All that drama that they built up to just let it go. And
it's like they walked up to poignancy with a gun and shot it point blank.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they did. It's like, oh, look, here's a really poignant scene. Bam! Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it served no purpose whatsoever. It was an unnecessary change.
Mm-hmm.
And even more so. Because it doesn't even have the benefit of being walkie-talkies. It's inexcusable.
Yeah.
And it makes it hard to, you know, look at everything that went right. The handful of things. I think the replacing of a lot of the effect shots was unnecessary. Especially when they made the replacements look far superior. What they should have done was replace those effect shots with something that looked like, if the X-Wings looked the same as they do in the scenes that weren't replaced, then it's a little more, I'm more willing to buy into it than these, like, wow, look how sharp those X-Wings. Now they're back to crap sharp.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They kept going back and forth.
And a good tiny example of how that works is if you look at Luke and Ben and 3PO and R2 entering the canteen at Mos Eisley.
Yeah.
And the puppet Dewback is now lively and it's not only groaning and slightly moving its head, it's now been replaced by a CG Dubac that actually reacts to their presence in an unfavorable way.
Mm-hmm.
But pay attention when they leave. Puppet!
Oh, wow.
They didn't spring for animating and replacing the puppet during that brief moment where they pass it.
Oh, okay.
And that's sort of what you're getting there with the Death Star. It'd be far too expensive to replace every single shot. So you get a combination of both, and it becomes unworkable. It's like, okay, either you go all in, or you at least try to match. Because otherwise you get that god-awful Episode I Yoda puppet that didn't look anything like Yoda. And it was a valuable lesson.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are the really big offenders. And, of course, the whole... One of the chief minor offenders, you know, not in the top ranges, but still a presence that didn't need to be there is the honeycomb hideout monster.
Oh yes, that's the one I was going to bring up next. Was the expanding
Joe Yowza?
Yeah, expanding the Max Rebo band.
Yeah, the fact that they had to just overblow that number, take away the subtle. Kind of what the original number had, it was a little bit of an overstated version of the Cantina Band.
Mm-hmm.
But it did sort of relax itself into the background, such as it could. And the tone was very, you know, very subtle kind of background. Play it again, Sam. You're there, but you're not the most important thing in the scene, too. Places for an inch number! It turned into Chicago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this isn't what I came to Star Wars for. This isn't, you know, Les Miserables with, you know, five lines of dialogue and 76 minutes of singing between brief moments, you know.
Well, am I wrong?
Want Borscht to come in. I've come for the bounty on this Wookiee.
Oh, gosh.
Blah, 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 blah.
Didn't John Williams' son write that song? Am I wrong?
I don't know.
I could have sworn when they were.
If we research things on this show, like any of my shows where I don't bother, we might know that.
It seems like I remember that from before it got released, and they were saying this is what you can expect, you know, in the upcoming whatever, and they were showcasing a few seconds of the honeycomb monster dancing, and I could have sworn I remember them talking about. John Williams' son was one that wrote that particular song.
That could well be. And from a purely cinematic standpoint, my biggest problem with the Honeycomb Monster is that it became a cartoon. Part of the problem with a lot of the CG, especially in Jabba's Palace, was they turned it over to cartoonists and not artists.
Yeah.
They didn't take the approach, because one of the things they do is... Ah, 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 and they shove the camera down his throat. If you had a practical effect there, you know, when Admiral Ackbar is like the puppet Admiral Ackbar, it's a trap. They didn't run the camera down his gullet. They didn't turn him into the penguin. It's a trap.
I don't even know what kind of voice that was.
That was Pierre the Penguin.
For
fans of At Midnight, and just in case Andrew should ever listen to the show, that'll haunt his nightmares.
It also took away from the drama of Ula getting dropped into the Rancor pit. I think I said Rancor instead of Rancor. My gosh! I guess that's acceptable in this show. it took away the drama of her getting dropped into the pit. And, you know, I was like, come on now.
But, yeah, it really was just too much of, you know, here's something I built, but now I can build it better. So I'm just going to I'm going to paint over it.
Yeah.
With better paint. So I'm going to take all my old crayon drawings and paint over them.
Let me go ahead and put some lipstick on the Mona Lisa, and I'll, there, she's done.
That's a good point, though, because it's like the Joker improving the art.
Well, that's okay. We'll allow that.
But it's like if you showed up at the Flugelheim the next morning. where apparently they have every single major work of art in a decidedly non-workable the curator of that museum should be shot. But at any rate, I mean, it literally is. You just like, George, you said I could watch him prove the Star Wars. I'm in trouble now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, you never know what will be referenced on this show. But in a way, it was almost a precursor to what was coming. And we didn't know it.
Definitely was. And it was like that was their practice for Jar Jar, which can be its own episode in itself. So I don't know if we should tackle that tonight.
we'll touch a little bit on some of the offenses of episode 1 through 3. Chief amongst those, I think, would have to be the Peter Cottontail's big basket of Easter eggs that was episode 1.
Mm-hmm.
It would just seem like that. Let's fill this with Easter eggs, because that's the thing we do now. That's what it's all about. That's what the kids want.
Yeah.
And you got everything from, oh, look, there's the Millennium Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell's an aluminum falcon? And to, like, the pod from 2001 upside down in Yaphet Kotto's backyard, in Watto's garage there and out in his yard.
Yeah.
Where he keeps his drive for Nubians. Very nice.
That was a pretty good Watto impression.
Those are like Watto and Chico Marx. that's so no good, boss. But I used to be Italian, but then I found out what they did to Mussolini, and now I'm Greek. We're fans of the Marx Brothers. Should have sent it to the Marx Brothers. But they, to the Senator Eat Tea there in the Senate.
Yes. Oh, that was the one I hated the most.
Or Greeblips, as he would come to be known.
Oh,
which,
God.
For those of you keeping score, that's Spielberg spelled backwards. And yeah, that was just... And once you noticed it, I don't think I noticed it the very first time, but I think by the second screening, the same damn day, I saw the stupid little ETs there. And then that immediately, your eye goes,
hey, oh, yeah.
ET, I don't care what's going on. I'm going to the ETs.
Oh, yeah. It just... It's all those little things that tick you out of the movie.
Yes.
And that's what... That was just so irritating. All the little slapstick stuff that Jar Jar does. The R2 tripping up the battle droids by using the oil slick. You know, all those little slapsticky moments, all those little goofy things that he put in for the kids is what takes you out of the drama.
The oil slick if it wasn't accompanied with the Keystone Cops movement and the snarky droids.
Yeah, that's
why
it.
Do your battle droids need to have an attitude built into their programming?
Exactly. Wasn't there a scene where the little pit droids in episode 1 did like the Three Stooges bit?
Yeah, I think there was a little
like in the deleted scenes or something
like that.
Yeah.
And they themselves were a little because one of them gets sucked through the engine of one of the pods.
Uh-huh.
And comes out unscathed. Which, you know, really calls to question what exactly kind of mechanism do you have in there? And apparently that's less elaborate than the entire rotor configuration of 1/4 of a shield helicarrier. Apparently with baling wire and bubble gum, Captain America and Iron Man can fix on the fly.
Yeah.
But back to the force fails. Certainly, absolutely, these were amongst some chief fails. Let's go outside of the movies, because we do have some things planned for episodes 1 through 3. So, you know, fear not. We will pick on those mercilessly in the future.
Yeah, because that literally
the Jedi Call suggested a way to approach at least episode one. Mm-hmm. We will probably pick mercilessly on episodes two and three as well. I do want to point out one of the things that I've had enough of in the Star Wars universe, and really literally in general at this point.
Okay.
The Wilhelm.
Oh, yeah. Because, we have that in Indiana Jones also.
Yes. The Wilhelm is a, for those of you unfamiliar with it, is a little sound bite that was recorded like well over half a century ago, probably bordering on a century ago.
Pretty much.
Named after either the person whose voice it is or the person whose performance it was used over in a movie, but it was apparently done for a Western, if memory serves.
I think I've heard a story that it was based on the sound person, the sound technician.
It might have been, but someone named who legend tells us was named Wilhelm. And it's that kind of sound.
Yeah. kind of goofy.
You first hear it when one of the stormtroopers is shot off the gantry in the Death Star. And
I think the first time I remember ever hearing it was like in a either an old Mickey Mouse cartoon or.
Well, we're talking about Star Wars here right now.
Well, technically, Mickey Mouse and Star Wars are not related, so.
Oh, okay. So you're going to retrofit that into the conversation, are you? But yeah, its first appearance was in A New Hope, or at the time, Star Wars.
Yeah.
It got used in Empire, it got used in Jedi, it got used in all three prequels. And each time, it became more and more and more tacked on.
Yeah.
To the point where it appeared in, when it appeared in episode 3, I think during the pitched battle at the beginning, and you have these guys like hand loading giant laser cannon.
Uh huh.
When you have the two ships abreast of each other firing into one another.
Yeah.
And there's this big explosion. And at this point, it's almost like the audio version of, you know, you just want like there to be, you know, wait for it, wait for it. Here's the Wilhelm!
Mm-hmm.
You know, you expect that to flash up on the screen like, look, kids, it's Mark Hamill in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. It's just like, okay, yeah, we know.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be that overt. And I think that's one of the things that happened. Mm-hmm. But let's move outside the movies a little bit. Let's talk about some force fails in merchandising. Probably the most famous is the obstetric C-3PO tape dispenser.
Yeah, which we touched on in the second episode.
During the merchandising. But, you know, there were given sort of free rein to do things. Kenner at the time, having the Star Wars license, needed to hit a lot of price points. Because not everybody was going to pony up, you know, $35 for a Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
They'd be damned if they're going to spend that kind of money on a toy. Christopher Walken is a boy espousing that he wasn't going to spend that kind of money. But, you know, they did the mini rigs.
Oh, yeah.
And they did a lot of other things. And luckily, you know, I have to give it to Lucasfilm. They did say no a few times. They said no to a series of C-3POs in chromed purple and green. And
really? I haven't heard about that.
Other, oh, yes. And they said no to, like, the disco costumes for the Star Wars 12-inch figures.
What?
But that meant they also said no to the 12-inch Lando, so you had to wait like 20-something years for that to happen.
Oh, okay.
So there were some near misses, and there were some serious fails in merchandising.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of racking my brain. I'm trying to, you know.
Well, the books. You know, you kind of touched on, well, obviously the Lando series and all, but, you know, and I think at one point we talked
Lando's
about.
Lando's not a series, he's a man.
Yeah. Thank you. Boy, you're on, you're on fire tonight. But, you know, in a previous episode, we talked about Splinter of the Mind's Eye, but aside from that even, you know, once you thought we were at a point where they had enough sense to churn out some good books, again, they started churning out some real stinkers, like the Crystal Star. I remember, you know, reading the Thrawn trilogy and was like, oh my gosh, that was so cool. And then I think either the next book was either The Courtship of Princess Leia, which I remember was pretty decent. But then you had Crystal Star by, I want to say, Vonda McIntyre, who, if you look, if I'm correct in that, you look at her past work, and yeah, she's a sci-fi writer, but when you read that book, it was so reminiscent of Splinter of the Mind's Eye, where you're thinking,
oh, wow.
You have these characters in name only. They were acting nothing like they didn't function in the Star Wars universe that
yes.
we knew.
That is the
biggest that was irritating. It was so irritating to read books like that, you know, until they really found their footing with the novels.
Well, here's another blue elephant in the room, talking about both the expanded universe and Force Fails.
Okay.
And that is, of course, Shadows of the Empire. And that one stings a lot for me because I remember hearing about it. And I remember being at a friend's house who was one of these people who was on the internet when nobody was on the internet. I mean, when literally, like, news groups was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, unless you knew somebody, it was sort of like in the early days of home video, where now, you know, little kids all have video cameras built into their leap pads.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, you know, it was a kind of a neat deal. So, you know, this was like early 90s, I guess, and we're starting to hear about this Shadows of the Empire thing in the mm-hmm. fanboy press.
Yeah.
And I remember getting on the internet at this friend's house and just going on and gushing about this thing. It's going to kind of bridge, take place between Empire and Jedi. And it's going to be really cool because it's going to be this whole multimedia extravaganza. It's going to be a little bit of everything. And we talked about this on the collectibles.
Yeah.
And it was a stinker.
It really was.
I remember reading an article in Starlog or something about the guy that wrote it. And it showed, you know, some aspects of his own life. Like, he was, like, really big into dirt bikes or motorcycles or something. And really big into, you know, pistol shooting and things like that. And I thought, you know, what I know about this book, because they had that whole, swoop bike culture going on.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you're folding in your, you know, your hobby of motorcycles.
Uh-huh.
And you're folding in all these, it was just like, oh, I'm just going to write myself into the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with one of the worst Star Wars names ever until Newt Gunray came along.
Oh, Dash Rendar?
Dash Rendar.
Oh,
yes.
Also known as peg warming figure of the year. I've never seen
actually,
somebody.
I think the biggest peg warmer, and this is another great Force Fail, was Snuva.
Snuva. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Chewbacca in Snuva disguise.
Yeah. But at least it was a variation of Chewbacca. I've never seen so many Dash Rendars in one little grouping as I did one day when I walked into, I think it was Target, on like practically the whole end cap.
Well, you know,
was like a little wall of Dash Rendars.
And the number one seller from that line?
What's that?
Princess Leia's Bosch, because at the time that was the only way you could get her.
Oh yeah, that's right. She was on the Shadows of the Empire card.
Exactly. Early on she was only available on the Shadows of the Empire card, and I really had to channel back to the fact that I missed out on the vintage A-Wing and had to pay something like $75 or $100 for one in the many, many years later in the aftermarket, because I refused to buy anything with the droid's logo. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to let that happen to me again. I'm taking it off the card. What does it matter?
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have even had the box anymore if I'd bought the stupid thing back when it was under droids.
You know, and the droids cartoon and Ewoks cartoon, there's a fail for you.
Exactly. I actually had that in mind early on and managed to forget. But yes, major fail for me. I didn't need to live in a world where there was a, somewhere in the Star Wars universe, there was an Uncle Gundy. And those stupid green creatures. And then,
oh, yeah. The
Ewok television movies.
Yeah, yeah.
I finally saw the first one. That was the Caravan of Courage.
Uh-huh.
I managed to get through not even half of it. And it was just monotonous.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Ewoks all spoke Ewok without benefit of anyone translating.
Oh, yeah. Caravan of Courage and The Battle for Endor was the sequel, which what irritated me was you went through the whole first movie, spoiler alert, coming up, as if anybody cares. You go through the whole movie, and you have the kid who's very reminiscent of a young, supposed to be like, you know, it's supposed to remind you of a young Luke Skywalker. They even have him dressed up in something that's vaguely reminiscent of the X-Wing pilot uniform. And then you have his little sister, who's pretty much a Shirley Temple ripoff. And so you go through
Shirley Temple.
Yeah, there. Space Shirley Temple. That's a new drink.
it's so you go basically this... Shirley Temple with dry ice thrown in. If you throw dry ice at any drink, it becomes a space drink.
That and blue milk.
Well, that's true.
But you go through this whole adventure with these two kids, and you know, and they survive these ridiculous odds, and they come out on top. So then you get the sequel, Battle for Endor. And what happens? Within the first 5 or 10 minutes, the older brother, the kid, gets killed. How?
Wow.
That right there, that much of a downer, that should have told everybody right there that sometime in the future, the Star Wars franchise was going to be owned by Disney. Because we know Disney can't make a movie without killing somebody, whether it's Bambi's mom or
the kid get rabies? They had to
or
shoot
Mufasa.
Him?
No,
it wasn't an old yeller then. Okay. Spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen Old Yeller.
But yeah, it's like within the opening act of the movie, the older brother gets killed, and so here she is now. She's got to live on by herself with all these teddy bears. She doesn't even speak their language, and I'm thinking, man, that is such a downer, you know, for all those kids who rooted for these two characters.
That's an even bigger downer than Slumdog Millionaire.
Never saw that one, but I'll take your word for
either,
it.
And if people who saw it are saying, well, it wasn't really a downer, Cole, that's why. Because I was just spitting out a name I know nothing about. If it was a downer, then I would have come out looking like I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Until I admitted that I didn't.
we'll edit that out.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But that's the magic of podcasting. But yeah, I mean, between those and the Ewok droid cartoons, I mean, come on, that was just another cash grab.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really what a lot of the Force fails come down to, is kind of either cash grabs or just, you know, literally phoning it in.
Oh yeah.
I mean, a lot of it was, I remember, this is not a Force fail related directly to Lucasfilm or the Star Wars franchise, but more to Entertainment Weekly, back when the special editions were first announced.
Uh-huh.
They were, or you know, they were going to be coming out that the upcoming summer. And Entertainment Weekly had a cover story where they showed an old vintage photo of Mark Hamill as Luke brandishing mm-hmm. a stormtrooper rifle and being mm-hmm. all, you know, action pose Luke. And it said, "This summer's biggest gambles." And I thought, okay, it's been how long since these were on the big screen nationally?
Mm-hmm.
And we're gearing up to go into the long overdue prequels?
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you classify this as a gamble? Anything mm-hmm. else they wrote about in that issue
yeah.
would have been a better cover story. Wouldn't have been as dynamic as Action Luke.
Mm-hmm.
But Action Luke didn't convey a gamble. Unless mm-hmm. by a gamble you mean even money, a sure thing. If you're talking about Biff Tannen with his sports almanac, then yes, that's exactly what that was. This was the biggest gamble of the summer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that still sticks in my craw.
Yeah.
And when we have Steve on here, I'll have to bring that up because I... I first saw that on the stack of Entertainment Weeklies in his bathroom.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You know, we're with all the bullet points I had for tonight's episode, we didn't even scratch the surface for the prequels as far as Force Fails. So we will have to do a Force Fails just on the prequels.
I think so. It would be
impossible otherwise to try to group them all together. But that being said, this is more of a lighthearted fail in my mind. But it's always kind of bothered me. So the stormtroopers, right? They're walking around in these uniforms. What good are wearing these uniforms and helmets that restrict their vision and what all and make them move all clunky? What good is it that they're wearing these if a single laser blast can kill them? Why does their armor not deflect laser blasts if they're the Empire? If they can't produce armor that can deflect a laser blast, what's the point of wearing the armor?
I think at that point it's sort of like, you know, you take a line from Futurama, you know, it was a sad day for robot kind. We can always build more killbots. No, we can get these stormtroopers are a dime a dozen, so we're going to spend a lot of money to put them in armor instead of cloth.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it's more, the Empire throws a lot of money at image.
Okay.
And I think that's what it's all about. You know, you see these guys coming in this armor, especially on, you know, inhospitable planets. like Tatooine. You know, these guys, uh-huh. You're like, you feel a bit sorry for them, even though they're, like, beating you up with the butts of their rifles.
Oh, yeah.
And even then, you have sympathy for them. It's sort of like if you were accused of shoplifting at Disney World.
Uh-huh.
And the guy in the Mickey Mouse suit came over and was, like, you know, gut-punching you. You'd still feel a little bit sorry for him because he's got to wear that damn Mickey Mouse suit for 3 hours a day in the Florida heat.
That's a good point. Speaking as somebody who is actually a professional mascot at one point in my life.
Oh, wow.
Wearing one of those mascot suits on a basketball court, that sucker gets hot really fast.
You want to go gut punch somebody just to take a little of the edge off.
So I never thought about that. On top of the fact that they had these pointless armor on, they're probably burning up in those things.
But, I mean, think about it. Who's going to complain?
Yeah.
Look at what happens to complainers.
That's a good point. That's a good argument, though, that you brought up. You know, it's all about image with the Empire. So, of course, they want their troopers to look imposing. So they're going to put them in these imposing, you know, these impressive looking uniforms with these helmets so you don't see their faces, you know. So yeah, I could, they kind of
it's also kind of like the parochial school type of thing. You want everybody to look the same. Uniforms, you can't
no individuality
tell.
You
can't tell who the poor stormtroopers are from the rich ones.
Gosh. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and they have
people are gonna look at the Empire in a whole different light after this episode.
Oh yeah, I'm surprised they didn't have the little Imperial crest patched on to their chest there.
Well, they were going to, but that cost extra.
Oh, okay. We don't want
to. At the point where you're spending, like, you know, $150 they had to outfit these guys. And that's, we're not even talking the shoes and the guns. Not to mention the free grappling hook thrown in.
Yeah. Just talk to the 501st if you want to know how expensive it can get.
Exactly. Well, this, that was in adjusted dollars.
Oh, okay.
The exchange rate with the Empire is pretty drastic. But we're hitting the 1 hour mark, and it's sad because there are so many things that make us weep. But at the same time, I think it's rather remarkable that you can't talk about where Star Wars went wrong without drifting into where it went right.
Exactly.
It's almost like it hurts us to admit that Star Wars done us wrong.
And you still love it. It's almost like it's almost like a parent with a child. I know it's kind of weird, you know, comparison, but you know, the parent of course loves their kid, but that doesn't mean they're not going to point out their faults and correct them where they need to be.
Especially
corrected.
If their friends are around.
Oh yeah.
and they're adults.
Yeah.
That's their prerogative for raising you.
That's right. That being said, we're really not trying to be whiny fanboys because, you know, nothing further from the truth. Because
you don't have to try to be a whiny fanboy.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's true. But it is kind of fun just to kind of – well, you don't want to just sit there and just – you know, just say that this is a perfect movie, this is a perfect franchise. It's a little fun just to kind of really sit back and think about it and try to point out some things where they could have improved or laugh at the things that went wrong. You know, a la the way Boba Fett went out like a punk instead of the tough bounty hunter.
Wow, how did we let that go? Okay,
I wasn't going to let that one
go. We're staying a little longer. Yes, Boba Fett going out like a punk was probably one of the greatest travesties.
And we don't even have the special edition to blame that one on. That's the sad.
We didn't have to wait. We got that back in 83. Like, boom, there you go. This is how bad it can get. And that was a precursor to the Ewoks. Didn't walk out of the theater back then, I don't know. But I think you're right. It's like having a kid, you know, for all of its faults, what's not to love?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it has its foibles, it's got its little problems, but for the most part, it's a good kid.
you just have to put him in time out every so often.
That's right. Or do what I do. Do what I do. And justify away the things that don't work.
Yeah. But again, despite the things like the C-3PO cereal, we do love it. There's
crunchy
good
crunchy food! wow, C-3PO cereal.
That being said, I think should we mention to our listeners what
Absolutely.
We can follow up with?
As you may know, we're a week late on this episode. So we're trying to get this out in front of everybody as quick as possible to make up for that fail. But that Life Day, we, you know, the Wookiee floor soup alone takes a whole day to make.
Especially when you have to listen to Harvey Korman give you instructions.
And Jefferson Starship.
No, let's not.
And plus the distraction of Wookiee porn.
And the Cirque du Soleil thing.
Oh, yeah. The fussy, fussy, fussy. So, you know, once you've had the space, all that jazz, and everything that one must do at Life Day solo, in some cases, especially with the Wookiee porn.
we're gonna get this episode red flagged by somebody.
Exactly.
What the number of times you've mentioned Wookiee porn in this episode.
I just want to, you know, pique interest in the holiday special. I'll be like, what the Wookiee porn? I got to check this out. So that said, you know, this was already planned. This was supposed to air last week. We just weren't going to make it. We weren't going to be able to record it, much less edit it. We're getting it out this week, which means next week we're going to be right on schedule, so you're going to get two episodes back-to-back. And like you're saying, Eddie, we're not here to just piss and moan and whine about how bad Star Wars was and all the bad stuff. We're a very balanced show here at the Rancor Pit, or the Rancor Pit, to correct your earlier error. That way it just all balances out. It just felt a little unwieldy there.
Yeah.
Next week, we have a very special treat for you. We're going to talk about something we kept drifting into constantly everywhere that Star Wars went right. And there's so much of that. Like this one, we're never going to be able to do it all in one episode.
Uh-huh.
But we're going to cram as much as we can into that.
We wanted desperately to touch on it. And we did touch on it in the first episode of the Rancor Pit, but we wanted desperately to just get right into all that. But next week, that's where we get to go crazy.
Yeah, this is the one where we're just going to just heaping piles of everything that worked for us, everything that made us, you know, have a hard time finding all the faults.
Mm-hmm. The reason why we have Star Wars shower curtains and bedspreads is because we love it so much, and you'll find out why
apparently.
We love it. Yeah, well, yeah, you got to have pajamas.
Yeah, the reason why I keep my tea bags in a vintage Empire Strikes Back space trunk.
Oh, That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Which is like the only piece of Star Wars that gets to invade. No, I take that back. There's some aprons in there as well.
Oh, I did see that when I was over at the Dollar Store Christmas. Oh, yes. That's right. I did see that up there.
Saw the Bantha apron from Celebration.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we don't barbecue, we had to have a barbecue apron. It's so cool. But we're going to be talking about that all next week. Of course, we're coming to you through the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. If you're in the great state of Texas, like myself and Eddie, you can visit, even if you're not, you feel free to visit Convention Awareness Project Texas at conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.org.
CapTex.
CapTex. That is conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com, rather, not org. Where you can find Convention Awareness Project, the fully comprehensive resource for conventions in the Lone Star State, which now includes 2014 listings in an ever-growing array of listings for the new year coming up. As I find out about more shows, they will be added.
And you're not kidding about ever-growing, because if Texas isn't anything, it's definitely a convention state, because every time you turn around, a new convention's popping up.
Oh, you wouldn't believe the volume I found last year when I launched the site. We're getting ready to January 1st will be the first anniversary of Convention Awareness Project Texas. I'm very much looking forward to that and continuing to serve the fan community.
Yeah, there's you've realized once you took on this project that there was so much out there, you actually had to hire an Ugnaught as your assistant to handle the
website.
I did.
In fact, I found a very special Ugnaught who is a Hunchback Snaggletooth Ugnaught.
Oh! Again, you're always trying to take us back into Hey Kids Comics. This is not Andy's playground, okay? Andy, stay in your playground, and I'll stay in mine.
Okay, well, this is one thing that Andy can't claim, and that is we have yet another multi-talented podcaster here in our midst. Eddie is also a very accomplished artist who has done some wonderful art for this series and has a lot of great stuff planned that you'll be seeing in the near future.
Thank you.
Where can we find more of your artwork?
EddieMedina.com, or you can find me at Facebook if you search Eddie Medina EdMed Art. And next month I'll be at the North Texas Comic Book Show. Can't remember the date offhand, but it's in January. It's going to be a 2-day show.
If you're curious as to when it is, go to Convention Awareness Project in Texas.
Plug. Yeah, there you go. Cole will definitely have the information on his website. But it's going to be a pretty cool 2-day event. They're going to have some legendary industry Marvel DC artists there, so it should be fun.
Excellent. And of course, you can. Many, many weeks in a row, you'll be seeing Eddie's artwork as part of Open Season, one of the JCU Sunday Fundies on the Jedi Cole Universe, every Sunday. He and Bobby Blakey trading off on that particular series.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you will be hearing us again next week as we talk about things that really, really worked well for us in Star Wars. And we will sign off with our another awkward, ill attempt at having no good sign off. So with that, I will simply say, Tauntaun, Tauntaun.
Rock on, Star Warriors.